Health Program Director?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Shangbao. Mark Shangbao. State your name for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening. I'm Mark Shangbao from the Health Department. In last year's reform bill, as Representative Norton, mentioned, the legislature assigned the Health Department to study changes necessary in licensure and regulation to ensure full utilization of the range of primary care providers. As you directed, we assembled a group with representatives from the Medical, Nursing, Physician Assistant, and Pharmacist Associations, and from their respective licensing boards. That group reviewed workforce trends, and they reviewed the competencies that make up primary care. All members agreed that these competencies, this set of competencies, are characteristic of all the primary care professionals, physicians, advanced practice nurses, and physician assistants. They looked at the intersection of these primary care trends and health reform principles, as has been mentioned, was part of the health reform bill, and their discussion included several themes, including making the most of all providers on the team in order to improve care and control costs, allowing professionals to practice at the top of their education and capacity, and reducing tasks that make poor use of members of the team, especially relieving physicians of low-value routine chores that others can do well. And the physician members of the work group participated and affirmed that goal. Members also studied the type of team care envisioned for healthcare homes and for a reformed health system. And members acknowledged that the great majority of advanced practice nurses and physicians already work in collaboration with physicians and hospitals in formal systems and in teams, as has been mentioned. The report, many of you have seen it. We have copies if any of you would like it. The report recommends changes to licensing for advanced practice nurses, physician assistants, and pharmacists to respond to those workforce trends and to achieve our state goals for efficiency and quality improvement. The physician assistant and pharmacist recommendations are already moving in other bills, and it's encouraging that the advanced practice nursing recommendations are reflected in the bill before you tonight. Last year, you put this study in the health reform bill, and we at MDH believe that's exactly the right place and the right context to consider the study's recommendations. So thank you for the opportunity to do this project, and we look forward to further progress.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from the members for Mr. Shangbao? Okay. Let's proceed with the testimony. We're going to have 15 minutes, and we'll have the proponents. You could divide however you want. Mary, trust me, I believe, right? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to testify in support of...
State your name for the record first.
My name is Mary Chesney. I am a clinical assistant professor at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing. I have also practiced as a pediatric nurse practitioner for the past 25 years, and I served as Minnesota Nurses Association's representative on the task force. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of this bill. My role today is to talk briefly about advanced practice registered nurses, give a quick overview of a few of the barriers, and then talk about why we think this is a good bill. There are four categories of advanced practice registered nurses. They include nurse midwives, clinical nurse specialists, nurse practitioners, and registered nurse anesthetists. Advanced practice registered nurses are educated in a four-year baccalaureate degree program, and they proceed on to a master's and or doctoral level of study in four of the APRN categories. And frankly, we do have some overlapping skills with physicians, but I think tonight what I want to highlight to you is that we bring skills to the healthcare reform efforts in the state that are unique and important. In our nursing discipline, we focus greatly on prevention, on health promotion. We are not only interested in the diagnosis and management of disease, but we also have a real push towards looking at the human response to disease, symptom management, and care coordination to help our patients maintain their best level of health despite whatever disease or disability burden that they have. In 2008, the legislature set out on this ambitious path about healthcare reform with the idea that we would try to meet the triple aim, that we'd improve the health of our population, and that we would enhance the patient experience in the healthcare system, and very importantly in these times of economic challenge, that we would at least try to keep the lid on costs, but certainly try to reduce costs where we can. Currently, there are barriers that are preventing some advanced practice registered nurses from being able to practice at the top of their education and scope of practice. And I won't belabor the part of going through all the barriers. You have them in your report, but I do want to just highlight a couple of examples. We have nurse practitioners who would like to volunteer time at volunteer clinics and give free service to the uninsured or the underserved. And they have a difficult time finding a physician who wants to enter into a prescriptive agreement in a setting for which that physician is not working. And in fact, some physicians are counseled by their insurance, liability insurance groups, not to enter into unnecessary agreements that may pose a liability for them. The scenario is particularly problematic for clinical nurse specialists in psych mental health. Some of them have found it very difficult to find a psychiatrist who either has the time or is willing to enter into a prescriptive agreement so they can practice. Some of our clinical nurse specialists in mental health have been charged of a portion of their gross income in order to compensate the physician for their time spent in being in a prescriptive agreement or consultation. We've also had folks that have had a hard time finding someone. They finally do have a psychiatrist to enter into the agreement with them, only to have something disrupt that, whether it's retirement, moving, a variety of different scenarios. And then we have patient populations of 100 or 200 or 300 in a caseload that are left needing medication management, and the CNS is scrambling for another few months to try to find someone to enter into the agreement. During the chat work, we did discuss the fact that one of the physicians and I discussed our frustration in trying to have a patient evaluated, a new patient, by a psychiatrist. Many times we're told to wait 2, 3, 4 months or more before an available appointment, and when we call to try to say that's not soon enough, we have a family in crisis, the response is if the child or adult becomes unstable, they're going to hurt themselves or others, then bring them in to a 72-hour hospital hold and have them evaluated and get their medication management that way. And it just seems to me in this time when we so desperately need to keep the lid on costs that that's absolutely the last point of access that we would want to send a family when we have capable providers who could be providing this care, the psych, mental health, clinical nurse specialist. The task force did recommend that we remove this prescriptive agreement because it's really serving as a barrier. But I think more importantly, what we're seeing is that the barriers really do deny access to people. It causes them to come when it's much more critical situation. The families are incredibly frustrated with this kind of long wait, and the costs are as I just described. An additional concern, as Representative Murphy described to you too, is this whole issue of collaborative management. It's been a term that's been highly confusing. Hospitals and insurers have used it to mean the management of us and not the collaborative management of patients. And so we do support clarifying that terminology, removing that particular terminology from our practice act. We also, in this bill, I think, really clarify our accountability, our responsibility, and our liability to the patients that we serve. The nursing profession has been the Gallup's most trusted profession for the last 7 years. And there is absolutely no evidence to support any notion that we would be any less likely to be very careful with our patients, guard patient safety, and only practice within our scope of practice, seeking help when we need that. So I ask the committee to base decisions about this bill on evidence and not on some of the anecdotal stories or some of the stories about outliers in our profession. The medical profession and nursing profession have the occasional outlier, the person who does not practice or prescribe in a way that is fitting of our standards of care. but it's important that we use evidence and a body of evidence to support that APRNs are safe, we're cost effective, and we give a high quality of care. In your handout, there is a bibliography of many, many studies, research studies showing our effectiveness, our safety, our high quality of care. In addition, I want to call your attention to a letter from Dr. Frank Serra, Senior Vice President for the Academic Health Center at the University of Minnesota, who is sorry he cannot join us tonight, but he did send a letter of support. And lastly, there's a chart that has a table, a colorful table on the bottom, that just gives you another example of evidence that shows a comparison between nurse practitioners and physicians with regard to the percentage of adverse claims or adverse events that are that happen in each of those various professions. And with that, I respectfully ask for your support of this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay. Thank you. We've got about five to 6 minutes. Are there questions from the members? Okay. We could proceed to Ms. Brecken. And after that, Ms. Stout. And then Mr. Dennis Less. State your name for the record and make proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, members of the committee. My name is Shirley Brecken. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Nursing. You do have a handout from me, and I'm not, in the interest of time, of course, not going to address all of the information that I provided to you in that handout. I do want to call particular attention to, as Representative Murphy told you earlier, that in 1999 the legislature effected a significant change to advanced practice nursing in Minnesota, one which primarily changed the practice of advanced practice nursing from that of being a delegated medical practice to an independent scope of nursing practice. And this is done with one exception. Again, the prescribing is predicated on a written prescribing agreement between an APRN and a physician. I would note, however, that that is except for nurse midwives. Nurse midwives have been able to prescribe. They are not required to have a written prescribing agreement, and they have been doing that in law since 1988. The legislature amended the Nurse Practice Act to include definitions of each of the categories of advanced practice nursing, and these definitions and the circumstances that generally provide the circumstances under which they practice is usually referred to as the scope of practice. The law requires the advanced practice nurse to practice within a healthcare system that provides for consultation, collaborative management, and referral as indicated by the health status of the patient, and defines advanced practice registered nursing to include accepting referrals from, consulting with, cooperating with, or referring to all other types of healthcare providers, including physicians, chiropractors, podiatrists, and dentists. As you can see, the legislature, I think, did a very good job of being very inclusive of the kind of practice and the circumstances that advanced practice nurses could practice under in the state of Minnesota. There is currently in law a definition for collaborative management, and that is a mutually agreed upon plan between an APRN and one or more physicians. There is no requirement in law currently for the agreed upon patient plan care, plan for care to be in writing. However, the board often receives reports that the requirement for a written prescribing agreement is frequently misinterpreted to be a written collaborative agreement, and the reported effect has been management of advanced practice nurse practice rather than the collaborative management of patient care. Regardless if there is not a requirement in law for a written collaborative agreement, the board holds APRNs accountable for their practice according to standards congruent with their role and specialty. And for recognizing one's limits of knowledge and experience, planning for the management of situations beyond the APRN's expertise, and referring patients to other healthcare providers as needed. This is not unlike medical practice. The law does not require physicians to collaborate, consult, or refer as appropriate for the patient. It is an expected standard of care for any healthcare provider, and regulatory boards hold licensees accountable for those expected standards. The important perspective is that of the patient who has a right to expect that their needs and preferences should be met by the healthcare professional with the most appropriate skills and training to provide the necessary care, and that effective interdisciplinary collaboration is critical to ensuring that all patients receive the highest possible quality of care. In February of this year, last month, the American College of Physicians published a paper titled Nurse Practitioners in Primary Care. In that document, the ACP defines collaboration as ongoing interdisciplinary communication regarding the care of individuals and populations of patients in order to promote quality and cost-effective care. The definition is congruent with the Institute of Medicine, Medicine's recommendations for patient-centered interdisciplinary care, and it is a standard to which the board holds APRNs accountable today. One of the regulatory authorities the board has is to investigate complaints of violations of the law by practitioners. In FY08, the board received a total of 35 complaints regarding APRN practice. This is approximately 9 complaints per 1,000 APRNs. The number of complaints regarding APRN practice are proportionately comparable to all nursing practitioners. The most common complaint is very similar to the total nursing population. That is, the inability to practice nursing safely due to illness, including chemical dependency. Since the board has been regulating advanced practice nursing, the board has taken action based on this ground the most often, followed by failing to follow prevailing standards of care and unethical or unprofessional conduct. The least often cited grounds for action have been related to sexual misconduct, misdiagnosis, malprescribing, and improper management of patient records. And I believe that you have that in your handout. I would like to say that proposed changes to healthcare professional scope of practice should be deliberative and should consider whether the proposed change will protect the public and enhance consumers' access to healthcare services. A few years ago, representatives from six of the regulatory boards for professions, the Federation of State Medical Boards, the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, that for Social Work, and the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, published a paper entitled Changes in Healthcare Perspective Scope of Practice. Based on reports from the Institute of Medicine and the Pew Healthcare Commission, they propose a process for addressing scope of practice, which is focused on patient safety. A framework for a scope of practice decision is based on the belief that the purpose of regulation is public protection, and it should have as a top priority in scope of practice decisions rather than professional self-interest.
Ms. Brecken,
I'll wrap up.
Okay.
In conclusion, legislative scope of practice should promote safe care, improve access to care, and recognize the inevitability of overlapping scopes of practice. I would stand for any questions that you have.
Okay. We will proceed. We did go over the time limit. I will add 5 more minutes to the last 2 testifiers, and we'll add that 5 minutes to the rest of the opponent as well. So we have Sue Stout and Dennis Les. And just keep in mind that the two of you have to split 5 minutes between the two of you. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair members. My name is Susan Stout. I represent the Minnesota Hospital Association. I'll take my 25 pages of testimony and break it down to a couple of bullet points for you. Rural and really hospitals throughout the state can't function without advanced practice nurses, and especially our rural hospitals count on advanced practice nurses as a key member of the staff. Anytime that we have barriers that exist to their full utilization on staff, it creates problems for these hospitals. And to the extent that we can remove barriers, it makes hospitals operate more efficiently and effectively. We know that advanced practice nurses, nurse anesthetists, CRNAs, nurse midwives, the whole group have been proven to be safe and good providers, and we want to support their practice. I do want to say that there's a flurry of amendments here in the last moment I do have a couple of concerns, and I don't want to slow the bill down because I think it's terribly important that you pass the bill tonight. But in the flurry of amendments, I'm a little bit worried that you may have actually added a few barriers to the CRNAs. And I would hope that Representative Murphy, and as the bill progresses, would work with us to make certain that that doesn't happen. I especially worry about the CRNAs because they're such a critical part of keeping our rural hospitals able to do surgery. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Ms. Stout?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Stout. Could you elaborate on the comments you just made regarding the CRNAs?
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative Rude, I'm a little bit worried on the AO-148 amendment about lines 116 through 118. It looks to me like it's probably a new requirement that every drug be listed, and we've not done that in the past, and I hate to layer on more requirements, and I may be reading it wrong, so I don't want to go much further than that. And maybe this is just a drafting, a stylistic drafting, but as I read line 1.9 through 112, it seems to me the exception that was in current law that said, except that CRNAs may continue to provide anesthesia in collaboration with physicians, seems to have gone away, and I wouldn't expect you want to go back from current law, but that's just sort of my on-the-fly looking at it, and I don't want to slow you down, but it might be something to look at later on. Thank you.
Justin Brown.
Thank you, Chair Tao. Ms. Stout, our intent was not to go backwards in any way whatsoever. This, I was scrutinizing that very section on 1.17, 1.8 when I received this late this afternoon, trying to convince myself whether this was changing anything with regards to this, and also shared with Representative Murphy. I've been trying to reach her for the hour and a half before me, and we just talked right before, raising the same concern. I pointed this section out to her and said, I've been told by the drafter that this does not just reestablish it. But if, in fact, the two concerns you raise, we'll take a close look at that and make sure we're not going backwards in any way.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Stout,
thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Wu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wonder if counsel would be willing to comment on that at all, because certainly that was not the intent of the committee. I think it was to try to just remove that group right now.
Ms. Bates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Root, I was not the drafter of this meeting, so I don't know what the intent was or how this decision was made.
I don't think there's that the intent is to do that. I think as this bill progress, I will work with Representative Vaughn and Representative Murphy to make sure that that does get addressed. So, Representative Vaughn.
Just so real quickly, most all of us are going to be sitting with seeing this bill in the next committee as well, and we will definitely correct it there if there's any problems, if we can't work it out with legal counsel tonight. Okay.
Mr. Bless.
Members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify tonight, Chairman Chow as well. And indeed, this amendment would have serious consequences for the CRNA practice in Minnesota. It would put us backwards because, as I read it, the exception was that we were not held to the collaborative management. Our standard was straightforward collaboration, and there is a great difference in how that is interpreted and how it could be promulgated in hospitals as to the interpretation of what that means. In addition, the other issue with the authority to prescribe could be, again, interpreted that we would have to come up with an agreement that lists every drug we're ever going to administer or prescribe within our practice, and that would be very detrimental as well. I had prepared arguments and statements that I was going to present, but with the, you know, development of this amendment, I think that at this point, the nurse anesthetist would oppose the bill if this moves forward because of the fact that it would put us backwards. Having said that, though, I'd like to give a little historical perspective. I have been practicing in Minnesota since 1995, so I was here in 1999 when these arguments were originally proposed, pro and con, in favor and opposed to the changes in the Advanced Practice Act. And again in 2002, when Governor Ventura opted Minnesota nurse anesthetists out of physician supervision on a federal level, I was here again. We heard the argument from the anesthesiologist that it was going to have a detrimental impact on patient care in the state of Minnesota. Both times that has not happened. In 1994, the Minnesota Department of Health did a study of the available data regarding quality outcomes in Minnesota and came to the conclusion that there was no difference in anesthesia outcomes based on provider. There is no study anywhere in the country, national in scope or otherwise, that would support any argument that there is a difference in outcome based on provider. And that is very strong evidence why the bill in its original form should move forward. We all know that health care delivery in our country is in crisis. It's, you know, from the perspective of patient access, and this is an access issue for anesthesia in Minnesota because in the rural areas, virtually 100% of anesthesia is provided by CRNAs only. Without those services in those communities, those patients would be forced to go elsewhere to get that care, and that is an access issue. We have data to show that in those rural hospitals that are served solely by CRNAs, in 2006, of the anesthetics provided in those institutions that were CRNA only, it was 38,000 anesthetics, which, if things are changed to impact that detrimentally, those patients would be forced to go elsewhere. So again, I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and hope you seriously consider what I've had to say.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Rest of the
and members, in the effort to address an issue by the anesthesiologist, there was no discussion about going backwards in terms of practice. And so we need to address this issue or the bill can't move forward, which maybe would make some of those who don't want to see this go forward happy, but it would be to the detriment of our efforts to reform and deliver health care more affordably across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you.
So we will be addressing that issue.
I believe so.
Mr. Chair, we still have time since we have them here tonight. I would like to briefly hear from the testifier that just up or anyone else the issues of specifically with the rural clinics. Forget the going backward part because that's not anyone's intent here. It was a drafting problem. But the issue of what is currently happening at the rural clinics, and we understand for some of the other areas, that's overly constraining the process that affects access. Could we have just a few words on the testifiers regarding that? And I don't know if you've seen.
Was there any more specific you want to get?
The testifier that had just been up previously.
Mr. Bless?
Yeah. I know that folks, I had never intended that those who came from out of town to talk about this, but I thought we'd have our amendment later in the process. So, to hear the question.
I would like to defer to Kathy Zieber, who is a rural practitioner in Minnesota.
We'll do that. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record, and you may proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Kathy Zieber. I'm a nurse anesthetist and have been for 11 years. I'm also a nurse educator at two of the universities here in the Twin Cities. And in addition, I've served for 6 years on the Northeast Minnesota Area Health Education Center Board of Directors, which looks at workforce issues in healthcare, recruiting and retention in underserved areas of Minnesota. So that's my background. The question, would you please restate the question you asked
The question is, we're understanding the key problem here is that there's some problem that's occurring in the rural areas or in the hospitals where CRNAs are the primary anesthetists available there. What is it's not working? Because currently my understanding is you're working with physicians, midwives, others. What's not working now in the current situation? Forget about what was in the language of the amendment state. What's not working for you?
I think one of the history of how that the word collaboration was originally put into that legislation back in 1999, I think it was a compromise, and there was a lot of discussion that had to do with elucidating the relationship between who we are as advanced practice nurses and who we work with. And that word was a compromise over the word supervision. Mm-hmm. And so the word collaboration, at least in the rural areas, the question is always how do we demonstrate collaboration for an inspection, mm-hmm. for a Medicare inspection, for state hospital inspection? How is it demonstrated that we are providing collaborative care? Mm-hmm. And instead of focusing on the care delivery to the patient, the focus has then been put back on the relationship between the advanced practice nurse and who he or she is working with, and what the nature of that relationship is, and how it's defined, and how it's in the policies and procedures, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think removing that or liberalizing the language so that it becomes more patient-focused, which was should be the intention of collaboration, rather than prescribing some type of oversight that has to be met in order to satisfy inspection criteria. It would certainly, if we impose more restrictions on the word collaboration, it's going to really impact rural staffing because of locum tenens staffing. We all move around from hospital to hospital to ensure that the surgery schedule is covered. And if we add another layer of credentialing to that, that could really adversely impact our ability to move between facilities.
I'm
still not sure I understand, and I've tried to sort through lots of information today, emails on this, that where other, are you saying, I mean, because it's not required to be in writing anyways, the cloud is part of it, what exactly the barrier is posed currently to you working effectively with all those folks in the care team that you have to work with?
Mm-hmm. There are some hospital administrators that immediately will ask us, who are you collaborating with, or let's see your collaborative practice agreement. They have been approached by people outside of their facilities with fear tactics, saying that unless you have this in place or you have a consultative agreement in writing, that you're not meeting the letter of the law.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We're going to proceed to the opponents, and keep in mind of the amendment that we just passed. Now it seems like a lot of concerns might have been addressed. So we have Randy Rice, Dr. F. Stein, Dr. Wu Sellers, and Mr. Rosetto. And just come as when your turn's up, and we'll give you your 20 plus minutes.
Good evening. I'm Randy Rice. I'm a family physician up in Moose Lake, Minnesota, practicing with a group of 12 other physicians as a primary care physician partnership, one of the more rare, more independent groups still left, hopefully for a while. Before that, I practiced up in Bedette, Minnesota for 13 years. So I've been in rural practice pretty much my entire career, and that has always been my focus. In the current practice I'm in, we do work with advanced practice nurses and PAs. We have three nurse practitioners and one PA in our clinic. I work very closely with three of them back and forth in our clinic, and I consider them very valuable parts of our team, and it's a very important aspect of our ability to provide the care we do within our systems. One of them is a diabetes educator as well, and I actually spend a lot of time actually almost consulting with her, and we go back and forth discussing management. So I feel it really is a truly a collaborative type arrangement in how we work it, and we both respect each other's abilities where they exist. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Medical Association, and also as one of the members of the Health Workforce Shortage Study Work Group. So I always have a little bit of a tongue twister with that name, but it was good to see Mary Chesney and Shirley Brackett again. We had a very good discussion at that meeting. It was a very productive time. I think this has been a very contentious issue, and I think we all came with it with an attitude of respect and working some hard issues that really, I think one of the better forms for trying to work together to come up with something rather than constantly trying to fight at what other people are doing, which is not very productive. I come here today still with some concerns over the bill as it stands. Certainly the current amendments have gone a long way to alleviate some of our concerns, but there are still a couple of things I would highlight. The Workforce Study Group spent a fair amount of time looking at this, it's probably the area that got the most discussion, I'd say, of all the different things we looked at. At least it was the most controversial discussion. And we came up with two recommendations regarding this. So one is that we amend the Nurse Practice Act to eliminate a written prescribing agreement as a requirement to prescribe drugs and therapeutic devices. And in conjunction with that, not as two separate items, but in efforts of trying to remove that piece, which has been somewhat of a difficult piece, a second point was put up to try and strengthen the collaborative agreement. And on that, the amendment there, or the recommendation there, was to amend the Nurse Practice Act to explicitly require the advanced practice registered nurse to practice within a health system that has a written plan for patient-centered care for interdisciplinary consultation, collaboration, and referral as indicated to achieve optimal patient outcomes as follows. Collaboration and consultation with physicians and other healthcare providers for purposes of assessment, diagnosis, and treatment based upon the needs, complexities, and preferences of the patient, and the competence, scope, and practice, and scope of practice and experience of the advanced practice registered nurse. B, a referral of patients to another member of the healthcare team when warranted, including communication of patient need and access to appropriate health records. C, designation of hospitals. Or other inpatient facilities where patients requiring admission will be referred, and B, designation of physicians and other health care providers with whom the advanced practice registered nurse has a pre-established arrangement to accept the transfer of care if the APN is without admitting privileges or is transferred care to another provider. That's the language that we came up with after a lot of discussion. I think, if I recall, Mary Chesley was one of the ones most instrumental in helping try and formulate that, certainly with a lot of back and forth over it. And I think we all came away from that reasonably comfortable. I mean, not what everybody wanted, but something everybody could kind of agree to. Our concerns as we look at the current proposal is that it separates out the nurses in terms of whether they're independent or whether they're in a system. And we would still have concerns if they're in a system that this same level of attention be applied. There are systems that approach things, and sometimes even to the objection of the nurse practitioners, they put them in places where they're not necessarily with those types of collaborative arrangements. And we feel it's important to address that issue. One of the concerns that was expressed at the committee and has been expressed, I think, as discussions of these have proceeded, is that it's difficult to go and rewrite all these contracts, and is it necessary to have something new if there's already a contract in place? Our feeling is many of the contracts out there probably to a large extent already address this. I think the recommendations as far as accepting the Minnesota Uniform Credentialing application, which I just looked at tonight for the first time, that sort of document could probably be written to contain the information necessary for that, although I don't think it would be a good form necessarily to hand that sort of thing to a patient or someone seeking information on that, because that's a very detailed history of a patient, of a nurse practitioner's work history, their complaints, all the other things that aren't probably an appropriate thing to pass out to patients. I certainly wouldn't want to pass out mine, even though I have nothing objectionable in it. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing I'd pass out to my patients. But I think contracts can be written that would incorporate those kind of things within the contracts as time goes, within systems, and not have to rewrite things to a great degree. But if there's not something in the code that specifies what types of things are being in that arrangement, we're uncomfortable with letting that go forward to say they're just excluded without any attention to what their agreements and their level of collaboration needs to be, just because they're within a healthcare system already. The I think a lot of our other objections got taken care of. The CNRA issues, we have some issues with some of the language that was just brought up at the end. I practice in a rural area, and we definitely depend on the CNRAs, and we would not want to see that go backwards, but it sounds like there's confidence that will get addressed, and I think we'd be comfortable with that then.
Thank you, Dr. Rice. Mr. Renner?
Mr. Chair and members, Dave Renner, also with the Minnesota Medical Association. I just wanted to take a few minutes just to comment on a couple of the amendments and try to clarify. First of all, on the CRNA amendment, as Dr. Rice indicated, the intent, we were supportive of this amendment. The intent absolutely is not to go backwards. The intent was to address, I think, what Representative Bunn had indicated when she presented this, that these issues were not discussed by the work group. If there is additional language that needed to be changed, we are willing to work and address those issues. And some of just talking with the authors of the amendment in the back, they suggested that as a starting point, we may not need the language on 1.16 through 1.18. And if that would give more comfort in showing a movement in the right direction, we could eliminate that language from the amendment. As for the amendment that Representative Murphy offered, I want to first of all thank her. She has been very accommodating. We've had a number of meetings over the last 2 weeks. She has made addressed a number of her concerns. The remaining concern, as Dr. Rice indicated, though, is to whom this bill, the requirement to have a collaborative plan does not apply. The language that is on 1.17 to 1.21 of the amendment, of the A1 amendment, indicates that if you are an advanced practice nurse, and you have a credentialing either for the health hospital, health plan, or HMO, you're not really required to have the information that's required on the top of page 3 in the bill. I think the argument being made is that some of that information may be in the credentialing documents. However, the requirement also says that you have to make that information available to patients upon request, and that requirement is also not in the bill as with Representative Murphy's amendment. So that is our remaining concern. I think if that issue could be addressed, then I think we would be comfortable with the legislation. But at this point, we cannot support it.
Okay. Thank you.
And my understanding is Drs. Abendstein and Boussalis no longer need to testify because of the Bond Amendment also.
And Mr. Are there questions for any of the testifier rep on Norton?
I do have an amendment that addresses the testimony that just occurred.
Why don't we take all the testimony first and we'll do that, the amendment, after that. We still have another testifier.
Oh, I thought they said they weren't. Okay.
Mr. Rosetto.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Dominic Spizzetto. I'm here representing the Minnesota Psychiatric Society, which represents about 500 psychiatrists in the state. We currently work with clinical nurse specialists for mental health under certain collaborative agreements, and we've done that for about a decade, and there are pros and cons to that, and I've had a chance to talk to the nurses and Representative Murphy, and we understand there are problems with those written agreements, and they can be somewhat cumbersome. But we do want you to keep in mind that in the case of psychotropic and psychiatric medications, we're not talking necessarily about an episodal kind of medication. We're talking about something that is going to be on a long-term basis. And frequently there are different types of medications and different doses that need to be achieved for every single patient. So there's a lot of trial and error that goes into this. And within consultation or collaboration, whatever the term is that we're going to replace the written agreement with, is very important for that relationship. Our major concern deals with the language relative to who has to have these 4 points on page 3 provided to the patient. As I understand it, the intent is to differentiate between nurses that are part of a large system or in a group practice, where the assumption is that there's already some sort of collaborative arrangement with the physician or psychiatrist or another provider, which we think is probably appropriate. However, when you go on to the independent side, we think it's very important that the patient be given these 4 descriptions of the relationship they have with a physician in terms of consultation, the relationship they have for referral, the inpatient facility that they're going to be referring to if necessary, and the plan for the transfer of the records. We think that's very important for those that are practicing independently. The confusion is basically relative to this credentialing. It seems the suggestion is that a advanced practice nurse that's in a facility doesn't need to do this in a group practice or a large clinic, which we understand. But then also if they're credentialed by a hospital or an HMO or health plan, they don't need to provide this information because they have this credentialing agreement. I'm not sure what that means. I don't think the credentialing agreement really means that much to the patient. In fact, this whatever 18-page document is not something that you're going to want to hand out to a patient. I think it would be preferable to do the 4 points that are in the statute. So what I would encourage you to do is, if this bill goes forward, is to figure out what you want to do with that certification. Frankly, I don't think the certification means as much to patients as we on the inside think it does. And maybe just differentiate between those nurses that are in large practices and group clinics and those that aren't. And those that aren't need to provide the patient with this information. And I should also add that if they're going to recommend a physician in a hospital that they're going to refer to, that they at least share that document with that physician and hospital so they know what is being distributed to patients with their name on it. So those are the concerns that we have. We look forward to working with the author. I had a chance to meet with Representative Murphy, and we've talked to the nurses about it. I guess we have a difference of opinion of what that language means, and we're hoping that we can clarify it if this moves forward.
Thank you. Very good. And then there are questions for Mr. Frazetto. Okay, Representative Murphy, you're back at the chair. And members, I noticed all of the amendments did not meet the deadline, but I'm being flexible right now. That's annoying.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the AO90157 amendment. And if it would work out, and I do not know that it will, but I'm going to offer an oral amendment on 2.16 to add the word strike on page 4 and cross out the word insert. And it would say line, and I also need to add, not sure if I need to add. What I'm trying to do is delete 2.16 through 2.18, but I can't delete it on my amendment because we've already adopted it in the bill, so I want to delete that from what we've just adopted. So I was going to say strike on page 9, line 14, after the period. So we're striking what we just put in.
Representative Norton, why don't we do this on the fly, not do it on the fly, and
I will move my amendment as it stands because the wording is exactly like Representative Bunn's, and then we can deal with the change to Representative Bunn's and my amendment later. So I would just move the bill as it's, the amendment as it stands.
Go ahead.
If I could address the changes.
Explain your amendment.
Thank you very much. I am totally supportive of the work of HRNs, and in fact have a number of them in my district. I do want them to work to the top of their license, and but I also support the collaborative management concept, the interdisciplinary consultation, collaboration, and referral plan that was referred to by the last, not Dominic, but the two speakers before that. They did talk about the work plan had two parts. One had to do with the medications and the prescribing, and the second part was in conjunction with that, but that part's been left out. So in working with the Minnesota Medical Association, this amendment just adds the second part of what they thought they had agreed to in the task force, which is the written plan for nurse practitioners and clinical specialists. The rest of the amendment is exactly as Representative Bunn had put in just a little bit ago, and so it will virtually not change anything else.
Okay. I take you opposed to the amendment, Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair and members, I do oppose this amendment as well. And I addressed this issue in my earlier comments. For those advanced practice nurses working in systems, these issues that are laid out on page 3 about referral and transfer of care and collaboration are in existence. And to add a written agreement, a written plan for every advanced practice nurse and every physician within every system is overly bureaucratic, and I think adds a burden to to the system in general, to the hospitals, to the clinics, and to the providers. And I don't think it's going to add any safety in terms of the care that's being provided. So I do oppose the amendment and ask for your support in that.
Representative Norton moved the AO9157, I believe. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Division?
Division's been called. Ayes, raise your hand. Three, the noes. Five. My ears are good. The noes have it. Amendment not adopted. There's been many. Okay, let's just go ahead with the bill. Are there discussions on the bill? It looks like staff has some cleanup amendment.
Yes.
And Representative Rood is willing to move that.
Yes.
And Ms. A, can you explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Pull out your amendment. You're going to have to read along with me.
Representative Barnes' amendment, right?
Yes, 148. The 148 amendment. Line 1.4. Strike everything after the period. 1.5. Strike mutually agreed upon plan between. So essentially everything on 1.4, 1.9 through that is gone.
Oh.
1.4 through 1.9 is gone.
It's gone.
Okay.
Okay. On 1.10, we're going to reinstate the stricken language. Mm-hmm. On 1.12, insert a period after 150A and delete the new language. 1.3, delete the new language. Strike, or
you didn't read that. State that last one again, please.
Okay, we're on line 1.12. Mm-hmm. We're putting a period after 150A, and we're deleting all the new language on that line and 1.13. We're deleting everything on 1.15. to 1.18. So what it will say if the amendment is adopted is certified registered nurse anesthetists may continue to provide anesthesia in collaboration with physicians, surgeons, podiatrists licensed under Chapter 153 and dentists licensed under Chapter 150A. Certified registered nurse anesthetists may provide anesthesia services at the same hospital, clinic, or healthcare setting as the physician, surgeon, podiatrist, or dentist. The repealer stands. It will stay in there.
I see someone approaching. Representative Bunn?
I'm sorry, I want to clarify, Ms. Aves, about the, you said delete 1.15.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't both of those sections specifically related to CRNA, so why are we putting them back in? Can you explain that part of what you just did?
Ms. Aves?
And could we possibly have,
we're going to reinstate sections 5 and 6 in the bill.
Why don't we do this?
Well,
Mr. Chair,
I'm still not clear to stick.
Hold on, why don't we do this? It's getting very complicated. It looks like her intention is not to go backwards. And that there's that commitment, and I don't think we should do this on the fly because that's what happened in the first place. So why don't we move this bill as it is?
What
did
you say?
Or relay over?
No.
And we come back Friday, it will be the first thing that we take up. Representative Murphy, when we get some language to fix this.
Representative Murphy is pondering that. Could we move to reconsider Representative Bunn's amendment? Although I don't know if we have to vote on this amendment first, but...
You could... if you move to reconsider, you would have to take your amendment back.
Well, are we gonna vote on my amendment first?
We could take your... You could withdraw your amendment, and then we could reconsider Representative Bunn's amendment, or we could just go ahead and vote on this. It seems like when your amendment gets fixed, there are pieces that Representative Bunn will change what you're doing as well. Wouldn't that be true, Representative Bunn?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of your question. I was thinking about what I wanted to say. What's the first...
Mr. Chair?
I just make another suggestion, and this is to Ms. Age. I'm just not still clear why... Okay, well, if Ms. Age, who is our legal counsel, believes that the changes she has now made fit the intent of leaving the CNAs exactly as they were before, and I assume if she will repeat for us that's what she has attempted to do here, and then I would be okay with adopting the change now, but we will scrutinize it in detail in the next 24 hours to make sure that's exactly what it does, and we will
sounds like you got an agreement.
We'll fix it on Friday or in Health and Human Policy if that's not the case.
Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Ace, is that close to,
Mr. Chair?
Hold on, Ms. Ace.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bunn, I believe that these sections need to stay in because we've removed the references to collaborative management agreement if this amendment is adopted. So since section 5 deletes the collaborative management agreement, that section needs to stay in to be consistent with this amendment if adopted.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Grindel has advice it might find useful.
Mr. Grindel?
It can come time.
Is there some advice?
Mr. Chairman, Ted Grindel, representing the Minnesota Society of Anesthesiology. I was just talking with the author of the bill, and I think where we started to disagree was deleting 1.15, which was, I think, the purpose of the amendment, of the author of the amendment, which was the new language that was in the bill in the first place. So I think we're open to the changes that were made down to 1.14 and the revisions there, and then I'm assuming that the deletion of 1.16 to 1.18 would be dealing with some of the concerns that were raised by others, and we would be fine with that as well.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to do. We're going to call a 15-minute recess to get this done, and we'll come back and we'll proceed. So, recess is called. Oh, we're back. House File 1668, laid over, meeting adjourned.